Taiwan, Washington, Monday, February 9th, 2009. Hello again from the nation's capital. I'm Greg Corumbus. In this edition, what really stimulates an economy? As the U.S. Senate moves forward with its stimulus version and we await a final version on the president's desk in a number of days, we talk with Brian Westbury, former chief economist for the Joint Economic Committee of Congress, about what history has shown does work in improving our economy, and we'll get his thoughts on the contents of the current stimulus package. Also in this edition, election eve in Israel. Likud candidate Benjamin Netanyahu appears to have a lead over the Kadima Party nominee Zvi Lipni. We'll find out what the key issues are and who's likely to emerge victorious when we talk with Josh Goodman of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Plus, radical Muslim terrorist training camps right here in America. We'll talk with Ryan Morrow of the Christian Action Network, which uncovered a Justice Department report detailing 35 terrorist training camps right here in America. Why won't the government shut them down? Plus, education spending in the stimulus plan. We'll talk about that with Jay Green of the Manhattan Institute. All that, plus Monday's headlines, follows our discussion with Brian Westbury about the stimulus plan, and that begins right now. My first guest in this edition is Brian Westbury, former chief economist for the Joint Economic Committee of Congress. He's now chief economist for First Trust Advisors in Lyle, Illinois, just outside Chicago. We want to ask Brian to draw on his congressional experience as well as just his understanding of the current economic situation in this country as the U.S. Senate moves forward with its version of an economic stimulus package. And, of course, a House Senate conference will be coming in the days ahead. And, Brian, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, you're very welcome, Greg.
The Senate version of this bill at one point was north of $900 billion, and it appeared at that point that few, if any, Republicans were going along. Now there's a compromise to the tune of $780 billion, but if you factor in amendments, it's now even more than the House version was. What's your sense of what really changed here, if anything, or is it just a dollar figure?
Well, I think it was partly the dollar figures that mattered, but mostly that was, in a sense, for some of these senators are going to vote for this kind of cover. In reality, what's changed is the employment report on Friday, and the Obama administration and others have picked up the pressure on the Congress, saying if you don't pass this, a catastrophe, I think was the direct quote from the president, could happen. That basically if the Great Depression 2 happens, you're to blame. And I think there's many senators, a couple of Republicans, that felt that pressure. And as long as they could make it look like they were being a little bit more stingy with the taxpayers' money, then they could go ahead and vote for it.
If there was no plan at all, do you believe that the latest economic numbers suggest that we would be heading towards an extremely dire economy, or do the facts not necessarily bear that out?
You got to go back to September. It was the failure of Lehman Brothers, and then that's when the first Treasury big bailout, $700 billion bailout, was put forward. And if you remember, the House voted it down that first day, and the stock market crashed 700 points, and President Bush went on TV, and that was the first real presidential kind of scary speech. You could lose your job, your house, your pension. And what happened then was we had a panic, not just in consumers, but businesses, too, and everybody stopped. There were some runs on banks. They didn't last very long, but it was this panic. And it's almost as if the economy fell right off the edge of a cliff then. And the data we are getting today on corporate earnings, on the employment report, it's all reflecting that panic. And so the big question for me about the economy is, when will that end? And will a stimulus plan actually help that end? I don't think so. And we can talk about that in a second, I'm sure. But the fact of the matter is that commodity prices are now beginning to pick up. Shipping rates are beginning to pick up. We're seeing some evidence that the Federal Reserve's additions of money supply to the economy are starting to change the course slightly. It's not that we're out of the woods, but I believe the economy would recover without the stimulus plan. And then one other point, I think this stimulus plan, because it boosts the size of government so much, will actually hurt the economy in the years ahead. It may help in the short run a little bit or make people feel a little bit better, but we will pay a price in the years ahead, because the government will be bigger and the private sector will be smaller.
Let's talk about the apparent inevitability, obviously, that there will be a stimulus plan. There's obviously one party that believes increasing spending and injecting that into the economy is the way to go. Others say it's tax cuts for businesses and individuals and families, and that way they can have more money in their pocket to do with what they see fit, and especially for businesses to grow and expand and employ people and so forth. What's your sense of what's in this current plan right now and how effective it'll be?
Yeah, well, it's about 80% spending and 20% tax cuts. And really, I only think about 15 or 20% of this whole bill, not just the tax cuts, but is actually stimulative at all. When you look back in history, higher government spending has not created jobs. The Great Society programs of the middle 1960s lifted government spending dramatically all during the 1970s, and unemployment went up. It didn't come down. The evidence to me is very clear. The bigger the government gets, the harder the time the economy has in creating new jobs. And so, in fact, the bigger the government is, the higher the unemployment rate. And by the way, just think it through it logically. If government spending could create wealth, then there shouldn't be a poor person in the world. Or let's put it this way, we would just spend right now until we created all these jobs in the U.S., and then we could just keep spending, and we would create jobs all over the whole world, and we could solve world poverty by just spending more taxpayer money. And it, clearly that can't happen, and everybody knows that or should admit it, and that tells you the problem here. And I think if we're really all about change, if we really want to do a new way of things today instead of the old way of things, that we ought to use $1 trillion, if that's what we have, to reform our entire tax code, a flat tax or a sales tax or just some completely different tax code to make it easier. Or maybe we take $1 trillion and we fix our entitlement system. Rather than adding new entitlements, let's fix it. We all know that that's going to grow and grow and grow and eat our budget alive. Just look at Japan. They're aging faster than we are, and they have problems. So we know what's coming, and if we have this much money, that's what we ought to try to fix. But instead, literally, we're trying the same old things that we tried back in the 1930s, and that is just government spending on anything, and the politicians will all tell us that it lifts the economy. But the evidence is clear. That's not what history shows.
Brian, how hard is it to stop this big government train once it starts? Obviously, it was a Republican president, as you mentioned, that made a big push in saying it's so urgent we have to have this Wall Street bailout. Now, of course, we see reviews of the first half of the TARP money, and about $78 billion was wasted or overpaid for assets that weren't as valuable as we thought. And now, of course, we've got a stimulus package that could be nearing $1 trillion by the time all is said and done. So now that this momentum has started, how do you reverse it, and how hard is it to reverse it?
Yeah, it's very, very difficult. I mean, I can give what I think are very good reasons and historical evidence and theory to show that this is not a good idea, but it seems like this train has left the station. It's got a lot of momentum, and it'll take a miracle, if that's what you think of as a miracle, to stop it. The momentum is there. What's scary a little bit to me is that we've now got this, it seems like a slight majority in our country, maybe it's 51%, 52%, who kind of believe that government can be our savior, and that can't be in the long run. It can't work. What creates wealth, what's created the miracle of the United States and the fact that we've become the richest country, most powerful country on the earth, is our free market system. It's our capitalism. It's our entrepreneurship and innovation and creativity. And government isn't all negative, so don't hear me say that. And capitalism isn't all perfect. But clearly, when you look around the world, countries with bigger governments grow more slowly and have a more difficult time lifting living standards. And it seems like there's a slight majority of people in America who have forgotten that right now. And as a result, the momentum is pretty strong.
Brian, you mentioned an historical example from the 60s into the 70s. Of course, it was the 70s into the 80s when the thinking began to change with the coming in of the Reagan administration, when big government had led in many ways to a very difficult economy in the late 70s and early 80s. How did folks learn the lesson that was opposite of what they learned 10, 15 years earlier?
Yeah, that's a great question, Greg. You know, I kind of look back in the mid-60s, and we had had things so good from World War II up to the mid-60s that we kind of got to this point where we said, okay, we're so wealthy, we can now divvy up all this wealth and redistribute it. And that's what the Great Society program was all about. And it eventually caused stagflation. And then the pain was so great from those mistakes by the late 70s that Ronald Reagan was able to beat Jimmy Carter, come in, cut taxes, slow the growth in government, and then we revived. And for 25 years almost, we had this booming economy, and now it's almost as if we've forgotten those lessons. So maybe it's a generational thing. I don't have a good answer for why we seem to forget those lessons. But, you know, I look back at the 230-plus years the U.S. has been around. Our average growth rate is only about 3% a year after adjustment for inflation. We're like the tortoise. You know, we've had 230 years, and that's gotten us where we are. And when things change, things get a little more painful. Sometimes we forget that pain is part of growth, and we never want pain. So we ask for a savior, and then that's when we start making mistakes, I think.
Well, less than a minute to go here, Brian. What's your forecast economically for the rest of the year, and what do you make of the fact that most of this stimulus won't even kick in for the next couple of years?
Yeah. Well, the economy, I expect to recover this year, and it won't be because of the stimulus package. Once again, that's going to be very difficult for people to grasp, and they probably won't even notice it because most people don't really watch these things that closely. The key ingredient to keep our economy or to get our economy growing again is the Federal Reserve's printing of money. In the Great Depression, the Federal Reserve collapsed the money supply. They made a huge mistake. This time, Ben Bernanke is not making that mistake. That money is seeping into the economy. I think it's beginning to bite. Commodity prices are up. Shipping rates are up. I think we will see some better economic data come by the spring into the early summer, but it won't be because of the stimulus plan.
Brian, unfortunately, that'll have to be the last word. As always, sir, thank you for your time.
Greg, thank you. Great to be with you.
As always, Brian Westbury, former chief economist for the Joint Economic Committee of Congress. He's now chief economist for First Trust Advisors in Lisle, Illinois, just outside Chicago. This is Dateline Washington.